You can't teach an old dog new tricks, but you can take an old airplane and modernize its systems and software to make it more efficient for duty. At Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma, they're breathing new life into old gear. Maximizing capabilities, they call it the art of the possible. Lieutenant General Bruce Litchfield is commander of the Air Force Sustainment Center at Tinker. He spoke with me at the Air Force Association's Air and Space Conference and told me about the ongoing efforts to modernize the fleet and the software that keeps it all going.
When we look at our weapon systems, we believe the cost of readiness, the cost of sustaining our weapon systems will determine the size of the force that we can afford, and the size of the force that we can afford will determine how we fight and win follow-on wars. And we owe it to our next generation to be as capable as we've been allowed to have through our forefathers.
And like the other military services, the Air Force has weapon systems that are very old, that have long since been acquired and paid for, so all of the cost is sustainment, like the nuclear missiles, for example. On the other hand, there are still some new systems still yet to be delivered, like the F-35, the new tanker. And so there's a lot of the sustainment money is on the very old stuff. But what's your thought on, should it be replaced? Can it be sustained indefinitely? And can the sustainment costs, if it's retained, be controlled and predicted somehow?
I have to tell you, it's a balance. It's a balance between what we need to be able to fight globally and then what technologies that we need to fight the high-end war. And so right now we're trying to strike the balance for keeping the old stuff going and then bringing on the new capabilities that will allow us to dominate.
I mean, you were a monitor for the F-22 program, which kind of got prematurely killed. And some people say if they had just let it go on a little longer, the cost would have started to come down. It's the old age-old question of volume versus unit cost and so on. And it did have two engines, which was kind of an advantage. So it seems like sometimes the acquisition and future sustainment and future capabilities don't always get the best balance in the terms of the warfighters as they view it.
There's no decision that's easy. And it was absolutely a tough one to decide whether we keep the F-22 going or move on to the F-35. And I wouldn't want to be in the shoes that had to make that decision. We can only advise the best that we can.
Sure. So talking about what's possible with sustainment versus acquisition versus the manpower, as you say, to run it, which is no small cost when you look at it all in with lifetime medical care and so forth. So what's your recommendation? How do you think the Air Force needs to approach this?
Can I tell you about Art of the Possible?
Please do.
So the KC-135 tanker, 50-plus years old in our inventory, it averaged about 226 days when it came in for maintenance. We now are able to do it on an average of 120 days. We just did a record one in 93 days. That gave 10 aircraft back to our user and saves about $30 million a year. So we were able to do it faster, get more capability out there, and do it cheaper. That's a pretty good definition of Art of the Possible.
So there are people that would say that, well, then keep them forever, and let's not have the acquisition cost of the successor.
So we are in uncharted territories on a 50-year-old aircraft. There was no computers that were put in play when we designed it, and there's no computer models to tell you how to fly an aircraft to 80 years old. So the question you have to be is, would you want to drive your car down 95 in rush hour being 80 years old?
I mean, in many ways, it's like George Washington's hatchet. At one time, they replaced the head, and later on, they replaced the handle, and it also has a new wedge. But otherwise, it's all original.
It's all original. But the great thing about it is we're both maintaining it, we are modernizing it, and the user needs the capability. So in the balance, as we bring on the KC-46, we have the balance for what the operational community needs.
And, you know, on the other front, the bomber, the B-52, is equally old, and they have an unfortunate word that we can't say on the radio that they've described that plane as, but that's planned for another 25 years or so.
That's right.
So you must be learning about really old stuff.
We're learning about the structures, but we're also modernizing at the same time. So putting in a digital backbone, putting in new weapon systems, putting in capabilities that it never was envisioned 50 years ago. It wasn't even on the drawing board, or technology allowed it to happen. So you have an old airframe, and we all have to sustain it, but you also have some great new capabilities that are really pretty awesome.
Did you ever wish they could just pull out the old blueprints and make new copies? Because it was already the development costs were sunk decades ago.
Actually, that is it's not only our wish, it's what we have to do. So that we are replacing structures on there that were never designed to be replaced. So we have to do reverse engineering. Thank goodness for additive manufacturing and laser technologies and all those things that are coming on board that allow us to do it.
We're speaking with Lieutenant General Bruce Litchfield, commander of the Air Force Sustainment Center. So give us another example of where you were able to strike that balance to get much greater sustainability, much more art of the possible. You said the tanker rebuild, I guess, got down by half of the number days, so that means it has half again more days to fly. Anything else? Any other examples?
So I'm going to give you some insight into the Air Force that most people don't know. Engines actually are one of the most critical elements to keep our force flying, because without an engine, they're static displays. And so in our engine arena, we have the engine that supports the KC-135 that we've been able to cut the flow time in half. We've been able to reduce the cost of what it takes to get it through the overhaul by reusing and remanufacturing parts that we hadn't done before. And right now, every engine in our Air Force inventory is green for the first time in my recollection, because of all the process improvement and all the business applications that we've made for the engine inventory.
It's because it's a number of years till that KC-46 is really operational, and many years until there's quantities that you'd be able to feel the difference.
Well, the first lot goes all the way out to 2028, so we know we got a lot of work ahead of us.
All right, and what about some of the other non-flying systems? What does the Air Force rely on that might be elderly that you're still trying to maintain and sustain?
So software is the arena that we're really going after in a big way. When I came in the Air Force, I know a long time ago, there was about 15% of the weapon systems were supported by software, their functionality. Today it's about 85-95%. And what we're trying to do is figure out ways that we can sustain systems that are software supported, such as our ground systems and intelligence and ISR, a lot of software usage and always needing upgrades, and we can do that much cheaper, much faster, and much more capable to drive down those costs.
I mean, a lot of that code was developed in obsolete languages, Jovial and so forth. I can't remember the name of all of them. But are you able to replicate the logic of them with modern languages such that you can maybe extend those systems even further?
It's really interesting. We do all of the above. So some of them we have to redo in the same language that you're right, that they are no longer done. Some we rehost onto new languages, and some we have to do. We get kids out of college now that are so smart, so quick, so fast that they can pick it up and get it fielded. You know, that gaming generation is really paying off for us and what we need to do to sustain our systems.
And we've had some experts lately, from academia mainly, but also from industry, that say really the military services and the federal government need to go back to having their own staff, employees or airmen as the case might be, doing coding and not contracting it out, because the trend for many years was to get rid of coders. I think the Air Force might have been the last holdout in having coders as airmen or airmen as coders. What's your feeling about that, the best way to sustain software long term?
So I think you need a balance. Our folks are really good at sustaining delivered weapon systems, but industry is really good at pushing the technology, pushing innovation, pushing creativity, and pushing the integration of complexity across. I think what the best solution is a balance between what industry brings to the table and what our organic folks can do to sustain weapon systems for a long, long time.
And as you look at sustainment and the big, you know, the small S and the sustainment center, the capital S, with more and more unmanned systems coming into play that are interacting with people that are not in them, and also with other platforms that do have people in them, what's your thought on sustainment there? How is that going to be?
We're happening? Now moving into those kind of arenas for the remotely piloted vehicles, and to be able to understand how to keep them not only today going, but also what technologies they'll need for the future.
Because they do have engines and so forth.
They have engines, they have avionics, they have sensors, they have software.
And you never have to replace the windshield, though, anyway.
Well, the sensors have windshields, and so you got to be careful about those, too.
And from the point of view of Tinker, Oklahoma, out there, so to speak, is how we in Washington put it, not nicely. How does Washington look to the people out there?
I am glad to be able to come to Washington with a visitor's badge and know that I get to go home to folks that make our Air Force better every day. And not that that doesn't happen in Washington, but I like being on the business end of what we do.
Nobody in Washington knows how to use a wrench.
And we're going to keep it that way. I will tell you, I am one of the luckiest general officers in the United States Air Force, because I get to come to work with 35,000 of great Americans who believe that what we do is making a difference for our Air Force, making a difference for our nation, and that makes me get up every morning with a smile on my face and thank goodness that I get to put on this uniform.